This podcast is supported by 23andMe.co.uk, a personalised genetic service available in the UK. The 23andMe genetic analysis is based on a small saliva sample. People in the UK can learn about their genetic information that published studies associate with conditions like blood clotting, cystic fibrosis, and even response to certain medicines. More information is available at 23andme.co.uk.
Everybody, and thank you for being here with us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. I'm your host, Chris Mascaro, and tonight Bob and I have another wonderful lineup of guests to share with you. We got a couple of former Steelers, so you know I'm excited. We've got a Hall of Fame quarterback who's also a Hall of Fame person, by the way. A couple of Pro Bowlers and a rookie to the show who's a member of a very exclusive club that I believe only my co-host Bob Lazzari is the other member in. We'll talk about that when he joins us later tonight. But Bob, it's a wonderful night here on Thursday Night Tailgate. We're going to have a lot of fun. Before I actually forget, if you ever wonder who that music is that's playing, that's the James Brocato Band, a great friend of mine, James Brocato, Brocato. Great stuff. He's got a lot of great music out there, so look him up. Bob, how are you tonight, my friend?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself, Christopher?
All right, sir. You know, Eastern Connecticut, I know earlier this week you were still getting snow. What's the weather like up there now?
Yeah, we got it right up to the end of March. Right now, we actually hit 50 degrees. People are walking around in short sleeves today, Chris. 50.
And,
wow. Tomorrow may hit 60, but lots of rain, which on top of a lot of the snow that's still here means one thing, flooding. And so more of the same, Chris, but temperatures are up. I will say that.
Well, at least it's going in the right direction. You know, I hope you guys don't get flooded out of there, but at least, you know, the mercury is above freezing for the first time in a while, and maybe you've seen the last of some snow for the 2014-2015 winter season. So my fingers crossed for you, my friend.
I hope so, Chris. I mean, as you know, I do a lot of exercising in the neighborhoods around here, and today was just a reminder of how much destruction it really caused. I mean, roads torn up, walls falling down, trees down. It's more than just what you think as pretty scenes when I post pictures. It can really be nasty, and there was nothing nastier than 2015, trust me.
I'm sure that's right. All right, folks, like we say at the top of every show, it's time, you know, let us help you relax. Settle in for the night. Let us take your mind off everything else that's going on in your life over the next couple of hours. And TNT is brought to you by former Bengals and Falcons tight end Reggie Kelly and the great folks over at Kyven Foods. Be sure to spice up everything on your menu by adding Kyven's salsa, sauces, and spices to whatever it is you're cooking. Check them out online. You can find them at kyven82.com, and Kyven is K-Y-V-A-N. The number 82.com to see their complete line of great products. We're also sponsored by Dr. Peter Candelora and the great folks over at Coastal Orthopedics. If you're living with joint pain, stop. Do what the Gridiron Greats do to get relief, and that's contact Coastal Orthopedics for more information. You can find them online at bone-dr.com. And baseball season, we're almost here, folks, right? Next week, games are going to get started for real. So you're going to want to check out our good friends over at the Louisville Slugger Museum and Factory. If you haven't been, you really got to go. If you're a baseball fan, you got to go and check this place out. You get to see the actual bats that your favorite Major League stars are going to be using in games made right before your very eyes. You get to walk the production line and see the full process going on live and in person. And, you know, like I say, if you're a baseball fan and you haven't seen this thing in action, you really got to go. Find out more information by going online at sluggermuseum.com. And we also want to give a shout-out to our friends over at the Gridiron Greats organization. They're doing great things to help take care of the guys who played long before there were even six-figure salaries or health care coverage. They've got a great event coming up in June. It's an evening with some great players, some legends, Mike Ditka, Mean Joe Green, Fred Biletnikoff, Tom Mack, Bob Sinclair, Coach Dick Vermeil, Jimbo Covert, Jim McMahon, and a host of others. It's a Hall of Fame dinner followed by a golf outing. So Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th at the Silverton Casino and Hotel out in Las Vegas. I'm telling you this now because it's going to sell out fast. So to get more information, go to gridirongreats.org/Hall of Fame to get yourself a part of that fantastic event. All right, who do we have with us tonight? Well, first up tonight in our 12th man segment, along with Sports One Marketing CEO and best-selling author David Meltzer, is going to be former Chargers running back and current radio broadcaster Hank Bauer. We'll hear what he and David are working on together here in just a few minutes. Following them is going to be former BC Lions and current CFL free agent defensive back Dante Marsh. Dante has spent the last 11 years in Vancouver with the Lions. He's a three-time Western Conference All-Star and a two-time Grey Cup champion with the Lions. At 36 years old, he says he's not done, and we're hoping teams look at the production he's put out on the field and not just simply his age. And we're going to talk about that with Dante in about 15 minutes. At the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by our good friend and Hall of Fame quarterback, Warren Moon. You know, we did a special live broadcast a couple of weeks ago when he was presented with the Unstoppable Award for the great work he's doing to help bring education to the villages in Africa. We're going to recap that event with Warren, plus get some insights from his amazing career when he's here about a half an hour from now. Later this hour, former Steelers Pro Bowl linebacker Robin Cole will be with us. Remember, Robin teased us a little bit last week, but now he's going to be back with a full segment with us this week. He played outside linebacker during the Steelers' last two Super Bowls in the 70s. You know, we'll talk about that. Plus, he was there for the not-so-good decade of the 80s, so we'll get all of that in with Robin about 50 minutes from now. Then we'll kick off the next hour with another former Steeler, and that's Leon Searcy. Leon also spent some time with the Jags, Ravens, and Dolphins. He's currently writing a book about his life and in the times that he was in the NFL. He's also got a new apparel line coming out called Real Men Block. Plus, he's putting together some new sports equipment, so we'll talk about all of that when he's here just over an hour from now. And then we're going to wrap up the show with Jason Grohman. Jason is a radio producer for NBC Sports out in L.A. He's become a great friend of the show. I've been fortunate enough to join he and Brian Weber on their show a couple of times from NBC Sports out in L.A. So with all of the talk with the Chargers and Raiders potentially building a joint stadium out in L.A., or potentially the Rams moving back to L.A., we'll get Jason's insights on what's going on in the L.A. scene when he's here about 90 minutes from now. So, you know, as always, we are wall-to-wall with great guests for you here on TNT. We can't thank you enough for, you know, taking the journey with us over the next couple of weeks, or next couple of hours. All right, we want to kick off the show like we do every week by saluting our brave military personnel listening in on the Armed Forces Radio Network. We want to pass along our sincere thanks to all of our veterans and everyone currently serving in every branch of the military and public service. You folks are absolutely incredible. We thank you for the sacrifices you either made as a veteran or are making now for every one of us. We truly appreciate what you do to protect the freedoms we all have and the liberties that you provide us that allows the rest of us to do what we do. Our sincere thanks as well to Sean Cruz and all the wonderful folks over at the Armed Forces Radio Network. It's an honor for us to have our show as a part of your network. You can find us by going to armedforcesradionetwork.org. And for the veterans listening in tonight, be sure to check out globalvoiceforveterans.org. It's a great news site with a wealth of information for our veterans. There's news, articles, everything specifically geared towards the veterans out there, and I'm sure you're going to find all of that information both interesting and beneficial. And again, it's globalvoiceforveterans.org. I also want to remind everyone where you can find our show. You can stream or download us for free from our site, ThursdayNightTailgate.com. Plus, our friends, you know, over at Boost Radio are streaming the show every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Go to boostradionetwork.com and click on the on-air link that you're going to find in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage to hear us. You can also find us on iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com, Spreaker, SoundCloud, and iTunes as well. And you can take us with you everywhere you go on your mobile device via the Stitcher or Player.fm app as well. All right. Now we want to switch gears a little bit, get a word from our friends over at Kyven Foods, which is brought to you by our friend, former Bengals and Falcons tight end, Mr. Reggie Kelly.
Add great flavor to your next tailgate party with Kyven Salsas. Former NFL tight end Reggie Kelly created these salsas for dipping chips and much more. In hot and mild flavors, Kyven Salsas make a great marinade. They are terrific in meatloaf and are super toppers for everything from baked potatoes to scrambled eggs. It's a great ingredient to enjoy in a variety of family favorite meals. And some people say Kyven Salsa is a meal to itself. With all the possibilities, Kyven is truly salsa with soul. Kyven Salsas are also made from natural ingredients, and they are preservative-free. So look for Kyven, that's K-Y-V-A-N, at area Walmart stores or online. Click on the Kyven logo on our website to check retail and online locations. More information at Kyven82.com.
If you want your guests to be raving about your next house party or your tailgate party, be sure to serve them plenty of Kyven Foods salsas, sauces, and spices to liven up everything you're going to put out on your spread. Be sure to check out their recipes. You can find them on our site, ThursdayNightTailgate.com, as well as their own site, Kyven82.com. And again, Kyven is K-Y-V-A-N, the number 82.com. And give them a like on Facebook. That's important to them, too. One taste, and I promise you, you're going to appreciate the goodness. All right, now joining us on the Kyven Foods guest line in our weekly 12th Man segment is Sports One Marketing CEO and best-selling author David Meltzer, along with his special guest tonight, former Chargers running back and longtime announcer Hank Bauer. Good evening, fellas.
Hey, guys.
Hey, good evening.
So, David, I got to ask, you know, you've had Hank on with you before, and he's fantastic. What are some of the things you and Hank are working on together now?
You know what? Hank is doing so much, especially, I don't know if you know this, but, you know, my brother actually is one of the leading rabbis in San Diego, and him and I have been on tour raising money for the Jewish community there in San Diego with my brother and his temple, and I wanted to thank him so much for everything that he's done in the last 6 months for us and our community as a whole, and even, you know, my brother's temple and the Jewish community there in San Diego. He's been doing so much besides golfing a lot. He has raised just a ton of money and helped us as a community and been a staple for so long. I don't want to take him because he looks so young, but, you know, football doesn't mean anything as a Charger fan or as a Charger without Hank Bauer. So wanted to get him on real quick in the 12th man segment because he's one of my inspirational friends, and want to thank him for everything he does for the community from the Ronald McDonald House. You know, one thing about Frank, and I think, is like, and I don't want to spoil it for him, is, you know, if anybody, when he speaks for charitable events, there is no honorarium, there's no kickback of money, there's no fee for appearance. And I know he makes a lot for corporations and his inspirational speeches, but even when they offer it, you donate it back to the charity. And he's just that type of guy. He's not in it for the money. He's in it for the love of the community and the love of the team. And he is the San Diego Chargers, and I just wanted to bring him on. I also had a quick question, but I can ask him, because I've heard some serious rumors about Philip Rivers and wanted to know what he knew about old Philip maybe being traded to Weezen Hutch with a couple other players so that they get Mariota in San Diego. So, Hank, I laid that egg up there for you, but buddy, great to have you on, and thank you so much for your time.
How you doing, David? Great to talk to you. Thank you for the kind words. Hey, I'm out here practicing up for our next tournament. You know, Dave and I just played in this Boys and Girls Club event up in Orange County. We finished 20 under. We had Vince Glantz, some really good golfers, right? Right,
yeah.
Dave? And we didn't win? 2000 doesn't win?
No, the Orange County crew cheats a lot, I think, because they must have been a lot of mulligans to be like legitimate with three scraps off of our team.
So, Dave, you grew up in San Diego. You know where Sequan is, right? Singing Hills?
Of course. Yeah.
A beautiful golf course. It's 75. I'm out here on the 14th fairway. It's gorgeous. And I mention it because not only do I belong here, and I'm a proud member, and I love to play out here. It's an amazing, you know, we got two championship 18s. But we got a kid playing in the Masters that grew up playing this golf course. Yeah, listen to this now. The kid grew up playing Sequan, and he goes to UOP, University of Pacific in Stockton, plays on the golf team there. His name is Byron Meth. He won the Publinks to get into Augusta, and he's back there practicing as we speak. So if everybody out there could just send some good vibes his way, it's going to be a pretty cool deal.
I'm going to be out there with Chris, so we'll definitely go. Maybe we can get him on the show on sometime too. We're going to track him down Thursday and Friday, and hopefully he'll make the cut. But if he doesn't, we'll put him on our show on Saturday. What do you say, Chris?
There you go.
That'd
that
be
sounds
fantastic.
Like a great
yeah.
idea.
That'd be great. So Philip Rivers, huh? You want to talk about Philip?
Yeah. What do you think? Is he going to stay with the Chargers? Do you think there's a chance they're going to trade him to get Mariota?
Boy, you know, this is the NFL draft, isn't it the greatest reality show of liar's poker ever, especially in the week leading up? So you know, either that or it's like the greatest fish game ever. I've got two threes. I've got three threes. You know, I don't know what anybody should or could or possibly could believe in the week leading up. I know this much. Philip has come out publicly and said, I am not going to sign an extension. He is in his walk year, right? There is a lot of speculation that the Chargers are going to be moving to Los Angeles after this season.
Yeah.
And again, we could spend a whole show on that. I'd say right now, honestly, knowing both sides pretty well, I'd say right now if I was a betting man, it's 50-50. People, so stay tuned. I've got a lot of inside information, so I'd say right now it is absolutely 50-50, maybe 60-40 staying. Okay, that's where I put it right now. We'll know more May 20th when they come up with the formal financial proposal for the new stadium to be built here in Mission Valley next to the existing one. Now, here's what people got to know about Philip. You know, he's made enough money, right? Does he ever have to work? No. Okay. No. He's coming off $100 million. Well, he's got seven. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Now the crazy thing is Philip Rivers is a professional athlete, seven kids with the same woman. Who he's been with since the seventh grade, his wife Tiffany. Philip is eventually gonna go back to Northern Alabama where his dad was his high school football coach. He's got family back there. Northern Alabama is not far from Nashville. These are the reasons this thing could happen, right? Philip Rivers has come out and said he's not going to sign an extension. Philip Rivers has also said that, I want to coach and I want to move back to Northern Alabama when I'm done. I don't want to move away from San Diego. I'm not so sure I want to be in L.A. Now, the Chargers could franchise him the next 2 years, right? And still own his rights and pay him a king's ransom. But at this point, you know, and again, Philip is coming off his first. Dude started like 144 straight games, played hurt, played in the AFC Championship game in New England 6 days after an ACL surgery. Think about that. Played in a horrible back last year at the end of the year, had a rib injury most of the year. If you're Philip Rivers, this is the first time he's been hurt. I mean, really hurt. For the Lions share of the second half of the season. So if you're Philip Rivers, I think he made the right statement. And he's not the kind of guy, it's not like you're moving one kid. You're moving seven kids. You're traveling with a baseball team. Okay, you got nine in the family. So it's not like he's gonna relocate and play somewhere that he's not gonna not going to be at. If the Chargers stay in San Diego, get the deal done, I could see him staying here. If the Chargers don't, I could see Phillip Rivers maybe going somewhere else, maybe to a Nashville. But all this stuff has to be decided before the end of the month, right? And yeah. Certainly there won't be no decision. There won't be a decision for the stadium issue. So could it happen? I'd say it could happen. Will it happen? I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't think it will. I do not think it will.
You know, there's so much costing in every facet of the NFL, from the stadiums to the owners to players like Phillip. And then, you know, here you have even Mariota and Winston, who I think are leveraging the NFL to get, you know, what they want out of the draft. You know, they both are saying they don't want to come, but, you know, I think these guys may be just leveraging to get everybody from their grandma to all their friends in the NFL to put them there in Chicago with them. So I think stay tuned on whether these kids show up to the draft as well, because it's really going to diminish the value of that draft if you don't have those two guys present.
Well, here's the deal. Quarterback is the hardest, it's the most important position of any sport, NFL quarterbacking. Got to have one, right? Got to have one. You can't win without them. Can't go to the playoffs without one. Hardest position to project going from college to the pros. Do you honestly think Jameis Winston is going to be an overnight success like an Andrew Luck?
No.
Now, the red flag is, what's the most important part other than the – he has the obvious skills and tools, right? I mean, and so does Mariota. But what's the most important part of being a quarterback? You better be smart, and you better be a good decision maker. You know, when you're stealing crab legs from a Publix, I don't dude, I don't know that helps your resume in decision making.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Can't argue with that.
When I have a business partner, I have all the choices, you know, from my Steinberg boys, and I choose Warren Moon because the one thing he does is he makes unbelievable decisions. And I know he's going to be on the show later today, but he is an unbelievable decision maker, and I think that Jameis could take some lessons from a mentor like Warren to help him out with how to portray himself and have a decision to make.
And going back to that, how'd that work out for Cleveland last year?
Right.
Exactly.
You know, and I wish the kid nothing but the best, and I pull for all of these young guys because it's such a wonderful experience to play in the National Football League. It's a gift. You know, it's definitely a privilege, and you would only hope that they would understand how precious it is and how short-lived it is, and that they take advantage of that. But projecting it, man, that's impossible. So I'm glad I don't have to make that decision. Think about this. Think about, all you got to do is go back to maybe the worst decision-making quarterback coming out of the draft in the history. Peyton Manning, then Ryan Leaf, ladies and gentlemen, who ended up making big rocks into little rocks. Yeah. He single-handedly killed our organization. He did. It's just a bad decision maker, and again, I wish Ryan, you know, nothing but the best getting his life together. But good God, you know, when you are so, he might have been the most disrespectful of any athlete I've ever met coming up through the ranks as a young guy, because he didn't respect his teammates, his coaches, the fans, the organization. He just did whatever the hell he wanted. Yeah, it was all about him. Exactly. So. You know, I don't begrudge anyone, and I don't harbor bad feelings, but he could kiss my grits, you know?
Well, he's built quite a legacy, and unlike you as a stellar announcer and player and just person in the community. So I know we're coming to close in a short segment, but there's no more. You can tell, Chris, that the best 12-man segment we've done here with pure inspiration with Hank Bauer, and we love to have him back, of course, and only wish you the best. And Chris, do you have anything for Hank before we go?
Well, you know, just, you know, a couple of things. You know, Hank, just to build on what you just said a moment ago about, you know, the decision whether you take a Peyton Manning or a Ryan Leaf, and to your point, if you swing and miss when you are, you know, hopefully drafting the guy that's going to be your franchise quarterback in the face of your franchise, which is sort of something you allude to there about, you know, decision making and the kind of person you get. But that typically, you know, as they say, sets your franchise back a decade if you miss on that pick. So, to, you know, I just curious, you know, if you look at a Winston or a Mariota, and one of those guys doesn't work out, and you've chosen them with the number one or a top 10 pick, you know, suddenly now, you know, you're reeling for years.
Years. Well, and again, the NFL has gotten closer. I mean, there's a handful of teams that are. There is probably a dozen teams that could, and then the rest of them absolutely have no freaking chance. Okay? And yet they are still competitive enough. You've got to hit on your first three picks. That's been this. Ask Warren about it. Ask Warren about how those drafts have worked out. How about that draft with Russell Wilson being the third pick and Irvin the first, and then the middle linebacker that they got started out of Utah State, the starting middle linebacker for sale. They hit on the first three picks that year, and they haven't looked back. Seattle
right.
has done it right. To me, they're the model. So you're right. You're right. Can't whiff on number one.
All right. Hank, thank you so much for joining us. To David's point, we hope you'll come back and do a full segment with us one time, because, holy cow,
hey,
there's so much to get into with you.
Well, until Dave finds me a job, I have nothing to do but practice my crappy golf. Okay? So, because right now, I'm not certain whether or not what my future holds, but I'm more than happy to come on anytime with you guys. Thank you for having me.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate it.
Ah, thank you. David, before we let you go, and you mentioned this a minute ago, we get the opportunity or the privilege to see you next Saturday at the Masters. We'll do the golf show with you and some guests there. But remind our listeners how they can get a copy of your book, Connected to Goodness, plus where some places you're going to be speaking that they can catch up with you.
Sure. I'm speaking at the Masters there with, you know, Beck and Score at Sanctuary at the Masters. And then I have the Orange County Bar Association as well. We have a variety of different things coming up with Merrill Lynch and a few others in Las Vegas, a couple conventions. And then in June, I'm going up to San Francisco for a CMO conference. So we're doing pretty well on the speaking tour. The book can be found at Amazon. We're almost at number one, so keep those readers coming to us, you know, whether it's on your Nook or iPhone or even the old-fashioned way in an old-fashioned book. And I just am so grateful to everyone. We have more books coming. We have the Meltzer Mission to say thank you better when you wake up for 30 straight days. That 30-day gratitude challenge. We just encourage everyone to stay the course, live like Hank Bauer, positive energy. Everything will work out for you, I promise. And I especially appreciate you and Bob, and I hope you enjoy Warren later on today. Look forward to seeing you at the Masters next week.
Fantastic. David, thank you so much for continuing to be a part of the show. You're wonderful, and I give our thanks to Hank as well. I look forward to catching up with you next week, but we'll have you on back on the show between now and then, so we look forward to who you'll have with us on the 12th Man segment next week. All the best to you and everyone at over at Sports One Marketing.
Thanks. Have a great time, and talk to you later.
All right.
Take care,
David.
Guys. Bye-bye.
Connected to Goodness. Manifest everything you desire in business and in life. If you haven't gotten your copy of that book yet, to David's point, you can pick it up on Amazon.com. It's just a wonderful read, and it's something that you're going to refer back to over and over again over the course of your life. So check it out. All right, Bobby, hopefully we'll still have the opportunity to talk to Dante Marsh, and we haven't heard from him yet, but hopefully he can still join us. We're going to take a quick commercial break here, another word from our friends over at Kyven Foods, plus over at Coastal Orthopedics, and we'll be back on the other side, Bob and I, plus Warren Moon still to come, so we look forward to that. Hang with us.
This is Reggie Kelly, former Cincinnati Bengals and Atlanta Falcon tight end. And I'm the owner of Kyven Foods. And if you enjoy delicious food, you're going to love my Kyven products, which consist of our honey apple salsa, sweet barbecue sauce, and an array of seasonings. For store locations, online orders, and recipes, check out our website at www.kyven82.com. That's K-Y-V-A-N 1-800-382-82.com. One taste, and you'll appreciate the goodness.
Are you suffering from chronic pain in your shoulders, hips, knees, or wrists? Tired of living life with an old injury that just won't go away? If you answered yes to either of these questions, we can help. At Coastal Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, Dr. Candelora and his fine staff of medical professionals will get you back on the road to recovery. Their state-of-the-art facility and attention to detail will ensure you will be enjoying life again and feeling invincible in no time. Since 1991, Dr. Candelora and Coastal Orthopedics have been specializing in joint replacement, arthritis, and osteoporosis care, as well as pediatric and adult general orthopedics. Visit us on the web, www.bone-dr.com, or call our Newport Richey office just north of Tampa at 727-848-1417. Proud sponsors of Mike Ditka's The Gridiron Greats Assistance Fund.
This is Reggie Kelly, former Cincinnati Bengals and Atlanta Falcons tight end, and you're listening to TNT, Thursday Night Tailgate. Brace yourself for the explosion.
Welcome back to Thursday Night Tailgate. Bob, while we wait for Warren Moon, who's set to join us here in just a couple of moments, something that we haven't had an opportunity over the last few weeks to get in is the Thursday Night Tailgate spotlight on the positive. So it's something that you and I feel very strongly about, making sure that the positive stories start to get more attention than all the negative ones. You've got a spotlight you wanted to bring up tonight?
Well, I started thinking about this, Chris, right after we had talked to Nick Lowry a few weeks ago. We know Nick does some good things, bullying and anti-bullying, things like that and everything. So I figured, let me look at some other kickers. I know these guys are underrated, but they do some great things off the field. And Robbie Gould of the Bears came to mind, Chris. We know how great a kicker he is, but I wasn't exactly up on what he does off the field. He runs an organization called the Golden Touch Organization. That's G-O-U-L-D, and of course, and they just do a lot of good things, Chris, with education, medical research, just overall wellness in all different kinds of communities. And he's got a really good board of directors, and I've done a lot of research on him. Again, it's goldentouch.org. You can find out a lot more of what this guy does, but we know how great a kicker he is, and he has something called the Golden Rules, which are things the organization kind of lives by. But check it out, Robbie Gould, great guy off the field.
Ah, that's great stuff, Bob. Before we get to our next guest, Warren Moon, I just want to get this one in on my end quickly. I want to give a shout-out, Bob, to Giants Chairman and Executive Vice President Steve Tisch. He donated about $1.2 million to the city's public school athletic league. He donated $1.2 million, so it's amazing to me. The funds will provide 53 new certified trainers and EMTs to oversee all contact practices at every school with varsity and junior varsity teams. As a result, Bob, nearly 3,500 high school players will have trained personnel at their practices, helping to, avoid injuries and ensuring a swift response if a player does go down with some injury on the field. His donation means thousands of student athletes are going to have extra support at practices to help stay safe, Bob. Over the last, several months, we've seen so many young players retire, right? More, in the last month, right? We've particularly Chris Borland of the 49ers citing some health concerns. Well, here's Steve Tisch giving a large sum of money back to youth football to help make the game safer. And Bob, I applaud him for it. These are the types of things, like what you talked about with Robbie Gould and what I'm saying here with Steve Tisch. These are the kind of stories that we want to make sure that we are spotlighting as often as we can, so that we can let, the good stuff, the good things that people are doing, get the publicity, that it well deserves, kind of, drown out all the negative stories. I mean, we got CNN and ESPN News and all those outlets hammering you every second with all the negative stuff. We want to make sure that we are doing a better job of bringing the positive news out and getting that on the front table. So Hopefully you enjoy that sort of stuff, and you can have something positive to focus on. We'll give you some stories to focus on as opposed to all the negative ones we hear so often about. But, Bob, good stuff from Robbie Gold. Thanks.
Same to you, Chris. And he's taken a page out of the Mara book, good people up here in New York that have done some great things. And they're Fordham people, Chris. They have to be good.
There you go. All right. Now joining us on the Kyven Foods guest line is Hall of Fame quarterback and recent recipient of the Unstoppable Award for his contributions to education for the villages over in Africa, and that's Warren Moon. Warren, thanks for being a part of the show again tonight.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Warren.
Warren, thank you again for inviting us out there to be a part of the Unstoppable Foundation Gala a couple of weeks ago out in L.A. It was a wonderful event. We had such a blast being a part of it. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the event and being recognized, you know, for the great things that you're doing.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you guys for being there. You know, when you set up your show there and I have all your listeners listening in, talking about the event, having different guests on that are at the event, that just brings much more exposure and awareness to the event and lets people know that something like this is actually going on and how they can get involved. So really appreciate your support that way. But I thought the night was amazing. I really did. It was a sellout crowd. I think we had over 600 people there, and they were only expecting about 580. We raised well over $1 million that night. And you know, the award that I got, no question about it, was quite an honor for me, very humbling. I was the first athlete to win that award, so really was a special night for me as well. So it was just a great night all together. Like I said, we raised a ton of money. We're going to be able to establish a lot more villages because of that money being raised. That means just helping a lot more kids get the opportunity to have an education, also have clean drinking water and hot meals every day, which, you know, it's hard to learn if you're hungry and thirsty and have disease. And by being able to supply the water and also the food, you know, it's going to help these kids be able to learn, and they're going to have the facilities now to learn. So I'm really excited about the opportunity.
Warren, people know about your playing career, but not enough know about how generous you are, both with your time and the support that you give to some great causes. We were also fortunate enough in late January to be with you at the Hall of Fame reception you did, where, you know, prior to the Pro Bowl and the Super Bowl, where proceeds went to support St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. You're doing great things, like you just mentioned. We're talking here about the Unstoppable Foundation. You also have your own Crescent Moon Foundation. You also help develop young athletes with a group called the Field Generals. When you peel back the layers of the onion, what's at the core? Why is giving back such, you know, such a main value and focus for you in your life now?
You know, I think it started you know, with my upbringing. My mother was just a very giving person. Even though we didn't have a whole lot, she was a single mom, and I had to go back to school and educate herself and be able to provide for seven kids when my dad passed away when I was 7 years old. So I think it started right there. I saw that we had very little, but she would always share whatever we did have with whoever that needed it in the neighborhood or wherever it was. You know, she would always donate money to different causes, whether it was the missions for food or whatever it might have been. Any little bit that she could give, she would give. And I think it just kind of rubbed off on me that way, the giving spirit. And then when I signed coming out of college, with my attorney and agent at that time, Lee Steinberg, he recommended that all of his clients give back to the community because he just felt like what the community gives back to you as far as support, as far as helping pay for your contracts, when you're playing professional football or professional sports, that you need to, you know, give back to your community. So I think he brought it all home to me as far as how to do it. But my mom was the one that actually, you know, taught me about doing and doing the right thing. So the combination of those two individuals made me want to be a guy that gave back whenever I possibly could. And football gave me that platform to be able to do it. And being famous and having a little status that way really puts me in a position where I can not only use my own money, but motivate other people to give money to worthy causes. So that's kind of all I've been doing since I retired. And people that get involved in giving, I think when you see the results of what you're able to do for other people that are less fortunate than yourself, I think you really get charged up by that and you want to do more. So that's kind of where I am right now in my life. I've been very blessed with all the things that I've been able to accomplish, you know, all the money that I've made. I live a pretty good life right now, and now I'm able to help other people that don't have as good a life. So it's a good way to feel, and it keeps you humble, keeps your perspective in line.
You mentioned Lee Steinberg, and Lee was there at the event that night. Talk about, you know, the relationship that that you've continued to maintain, you know, all these years after your playing career with Lee.
Well, you know, he's one of my close friends, probably one of the smartest guys I've ever met. Had a great, you know, practice with athletes for many, many years. And then he, you know, had some personal problems of his own, and he went through, you know, a bout with alcoholism. But he's conquered that. He's been sober now for the last 3 years and really getting back up on his feet and doing some really good things. So I'm really fortunate to have him in my life, and I was fortunate to have him in my life when I was just becoming a young man at 21 years old, not really knowing, you know, everything that was going on. He really guided me the right way, and like I said, just a blessing to have him in my life as not only a business partner but also a friend, because you need somebody that you can really trust in your life at that particular time when you're coming into all this money and all this fame and you've never, you know, been used to dealing with that. And he was the right person for me, and he was the right person for a lot of other guys.
That's fantastic. Bob, questions for Warren?
Yeah, Warren, I'm going to stay on that same topic. And Chris knows I like to ask this to the guests who are always helping others like yourself. And we've asked this to Tony Collins and others, Warren, as far as when you have people come up to you and are so grateful and almost in tears and thanking you for your efforts, doesn't that trump anything you've really ever done on the football field?
You know, it really does, because, you know, football is just a small part of your life. And for me, played as long as anybody. I played 23 years of professional football, so I played a long time, and still I've been retired now some 15 years, and I still have a lot of life left to live. So I was just really thankful and grateful to have football as part of my life, and as long as you use it the right way, I think that's the main thing, and I'm trying to use it the right way as far as how I conduct the rest of my life, and actually how I tried to conduct my life while I was playing as well. I tried to be as great a professional as I could. I tried to be as classy as I could, and also try not take my eye off people who.
Do we lose
them? Just me as a, anybody that knows me.
Warren, I think we're losing you. I think he just dropped off the line. So hopefully Warren will give us a call back here in a second. But Bob, you know, the idea that, you know, like I said in the main intro, Warren is a Hall of Fame quarterback, but what people don't know is what a Hall of Fame human being he is now post his career. We all know what great things he did during his career. And just like we said a moment ago in the spotlight on the positive, not enough people know about the great things that he has done, you know, since he's retired.
There's so many athletes, Chris, that get it done one way or the other, but it's very hard to combine greatness to the degree that he did. I have his stats in front of me, and if you look at his stats between 89 and maybe 96, it's just mind-boggling. This is not counting what he did in Canada. We've talked about that. We've talked about everything he's done on the football field, but it's what you do off. Hall of Fame, both on and off the field, is so much. You know, you have so much on your plate, but very few people have combined it like Mr. Moon has.
Exactly right, and we've got him back on the line, Bob. So if you want, Warren, want to complete your thought?
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. You know, technology isn't perfect these days, but I'm back on the line. I don't know exactly where you lost me, but basically, I was just talking about how you know, grateful I am to have had, you know, football as part of my life, and how I try and use it in a positive way, not only to, you know, to help myself, to help my family and my friends, but also help those that I feel like my celebrity and my status can help. So it's a pretty simple strategy, you know, of living your life. As long as you feel like you're doing the right thing, you're trying to keep yourself out of any trouble. You know, it's not to say I've I've been perfect in my life and haven't made any mistakes, but I definitely try to be as perfect as I possibly can. And just try and, you know, look out for other people and don't try and act like I'm better than anybody else. Even though I happen to be, you know, pretty good at what I did for a living, but there's a lot of people that are very good at what they do for a living. They just don't get the exposure because it's not a celebrity driven job that they have. So I always keep that in perspective, that there's a lot of people out there that are very talented at what they do.
And one more, Warren, about the off the field stuff. To me, you said, and it's a challenge, Warren, you help so many people. To me, and I'm sure you've come across the quote-unquote problem, is just who to help. I mean, do you ever get to the point where, man, I wish I could get to this population or this demographic, or do you have to wait till it comes to you? Is that a continuous challenge, Warren, who to help and reach out to?
You know, it is, because you get so many requests from so many different people because they know you're in the business of helping people. So I try and look at things that I really have an interest in, and those are the things I try and give to. And education is a big thing that's important to me, because I know every kid can't be a great athlete, every kid can't be an actor or a singer, but I think every kid has the opportunity or the ability to learn. And if you give them that chance to learn, then they have a chance to compete and get a job and be successful in life. So education has always been something my foundation focuses on, by giving scholarships to underprivileged high school kids to go to college. And then, of course, what I'm doing with Unstoppable, you know, going into third world countries and doing the same thing in undeveloped nations where these kids don't have any opportunity for education. So that's one place I like to start. But young kids are something that really motivated me, and that's why I got involved with St. Jude, because of what they do for young kids with cancer. I was involved with Children's Hospital for a long time and the Children's Miracle Network, same thing, helping young kids that are sick and have diseases, that you're trying to get them healthy so they can enjoy, you know, the same type of life that a healthy kid lives. So those types of things are important to me.
Warren, we always hate to hear stories about bad things that happen to good people. And I heard an interview you did, I think, last week on ESPN Radio regarding, you know, racial issues and death threats that you faced just to even play the game. So I'm curious, did you get to enjoy playing what is a game? Or was so much of your career about, you know, getting a chance to show what you can do and proving people wrong and dealing with a bunch of garbage that, you know, outside of the game? It really wasn't all that much fun for you?
It wasn't as much fun as I feel like it could have been. There's no question about it, just because of all those things you talked about, different challenges of just trying to prove to people that I could even play the position at different levels, whether it was, you know, high school, whether it was having to go to junior college to get to major college, going to Canada to get to the NFL, just continually having to prove myself. So I played my whole career basically with a chip on my shoulder and always felt like I had to go out there and prove things as opposed to just going out there and winning the game for my football team. So, you know, you put a little bit of extra pressure on yourself, and then you had the, you know, the pressure of your race, because I was one of the few black quarterbacks at the time. You know, a lot of people were depending on me to be successful, and you felt that burden as well. But the only time it really is fun when you're playing football or any sport, I think, is when you win. Because if you're not winning, it's just not as fun going out there every day, because you put in a lot of hard work, a lot of hours, a lot of sweat, a lot of study, and you want to make that worthwhile for yourself by winning on the weekend. And if you don't do that, then you feel like the whole week has been a failure. So the game, like I said, isn't as fun unless you're winning, and especially when you have all those other things going on that I had to deal with from time to time.
Well, as you talk about winning and failures, and it's interesting to me, athletes on any level tend to remember the failures more than they do the successes. We had Jeff Reed on a couple of weeks ago, and he's one of the most accurate kickers in NFL history, yet two kicks he missed in a game against the Bears still bothers him. Is there a game or a play that still eats at you?
Oh, no question. There's, you know, playoff losses, that's what ends your season. And my one regret playing in the National Football League was not winning a championship, because I think that's what you play a team sport for, is to win a championship. And I did a lot of good things individually and with you know, setting records and things like that. But those things don't mean a whole lot if you don't, if you're not standing on that victory podium at the end of the game. So that's my biggest regret, like I said. And any playoff loss that I had that ended our season and we didn't weren't able to get to a championship was a game that you're always going to remember. What could I have done more? What could I have done better? I think every player is going to second-guess themselves in games like that.
Bob, more for Warren?
Yes, Warren, going back, I don't want to bring you too far back, but I was looking at some of your early days, and I went back to the high school teammates you played with, Warren, out in L.A. at Alexander Hamilton, and I noticed that Rod Martin was one of them. It was a great linebacker, and Stephen Baker, who was almost a cult hero up here in New York for years, he was a touchdown maker. I was just wondering if you kept in touch with high school, not necessarily teammates, but alumni of Alexander Hamilton over the years.
Oh, yeah. Some of my closest friends are some of my high school buddies, and a lot of them were older than me at the time, believe it or not. And that was one of the things that helped me become better is I competed against older guys that were either seniors when I was a sophomore or either they had graduated and they were playing college ball and I was still in high school, and I would, you know, compete against those guys. We'd have flag football. Everything we did, whether it was basketball, whatever, I'm competing against older guys, and I felt like that's what helped me improve, because when you play against guys that are a little bit more physical than you are, a little bit more experienced than you are, you should get better if you don't let them beat you down. And that's exactly what happened to me. And all those guys that I hung out with back in those days, we still get together three, four, or five times a year, and we'll have dinner, and we'll just you'll think we never left each other when we start talking to each other, because the same jokes come up, the same stories come out. It's just a great time to be around those guys, because those are guys that knew you before you were nobody, and those are the guys you really want to be around that really judge you for who you are, not for what you became.
And I've told you in the past, Warren, you were probably my dad's favorite quarterback of all time. You and George Blanda, he had just something for you guys. He followed you guys religiously. But also, he admired the way you threw the football, the pretty pass. But also, you had a very strong arm. And Chris and I have discussed this on the baseball shows in the past about arm strength. And is that something every offseason, Warren, you had to worry about as a football player? We always talk about baseball pitchers, you know, to strengthen your arm, you should throw more. There's a big controversy. Was that something you had to concentrate on, or by the time you got to the NFL, you really couldn't do much? It was more fine-tuning.
Yeah, by the time I got to the league, it was more fine-tuning. My arm was always strong, and I think I developed that as a youngster in high school and playing Pop Warner football. The amount of throws that I would make, you know, throughout the year, there's no question it strengthened my arm. And I also played baseball. That made my arm stronger as well. So I just developed a very strong arm at a very young age, and program and an icing program once I got into the NFL and really, you know, got to be older in the league, that really helped keep my arm fresh all the time. So I never really had any arm problems at all. And younger guys that came into training camp, and here I was maybe in my late 30s or almost into my 40s, these guys would have these, you know, sore arms in training camp and couldn't throw for a practice or two because their arms were thrown out. And here I was, this old guy, still whipping them around because I took very good care of my body. And that was something I think that made me last as long as I did, because I had a training regimen that was very, very good for me, and it really kept me fresh, kept me loose, and kept my arm in really, really good shape.
Warren, one more before we let you go. You know, our show is heard around the world on Armed Forces Radio, plus several other great internet radio sites. We love giving you and your peers a place to have a voice, a place to come to talk about the things that are important to you. Is there something you would really like people to know, either about you, your company, Sports One Marketing, or other things that you're doing now that you'd like to share before we let you go?
I think people probably don't know that I do have my business, Sports One Marketing, but a lot of what we do has to do with giving back to charity. You know, we do a lot of events with our marketing company, and those events, we might go out and sell sponsorships, but we're selling those sponsorships to raise money for a charity. And just like with Unstoppable, we got involved with them, and we helped sell sponsorships to make that event grow. It helps our company, no question about it, but it also helps the charity raise money and gets these companies involved in very good causes. So I think the fact that I have a foundation, but I also have a company that also tries to raise money for other charities is something a lot of people probably don't know.
There you go. Warren, tell our listeners how they can follow you over social media and, you know, get more information about Sports One Marketing. For those that want to get involved and understand the things you're doing, how can they find out?
Well, they can go to my sportsonemarketing.com website to find out more about my business and what we do as a business. You can follow me on Twitter at WMoon1. And then if you want to know more about my foundation, you can go to CrescentMoonFoundation.org. So those are the three places where you can find out as much information on me as you can. I try and keep up with Twitter as much as I can as far as the things that I'm doing, the type of events that I'm going to. I also have a newsletter that comes out every month as part of my company newsletter and lets you know everything that I'm doing, you know, around the country and around the world. So if you're interested in what I'm doing, those are the best ways to find out. And I really appreciate you guys for having me on and giving me this opportunity to talk about the event a couple of weeks ago and how big a success it was, and you guys really helped make that happen.
Well, thank you for having us out there, Warren. It's always a privilege for us to be a part of the things that you're doing. Thank you for taking time out of your night to come and share the stories, and we look forward to catching up with you hopefully again real soon.
Okay, guys, take care. Enjoy the off-season, because the season will be here before you know it.
Exactly right.
Always
take
an
care,
honor.
Warren. Talk soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Warren Moon. I tell you, like I said throughout the course of the show so far, a Hall of Fame quarterback and a Hall of Fame human being, Bob.
You get the feeling, Chris, a guy that good on the gridiron that when he retired, it was almost his real calling just started. And you can see how passionate he is about helping other people, and he's probably going to do it for a long time. But I have the numbers in front of me, and they're just mind-boggling when you look at it. I don't have the Canada numbers, but we know how many yards this guy passed for. But
right,
my goodness, Chris, it's just fun and an honor to speak with him at the same time.
Yeah, and Bob, to your point, we've got our next guest, Robin Cole, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Robin here in just a second. But Bob, you know, you talk about the second half of Warren's life, and this is something I'm sure Robin Cole could attest to, is, being such a big Steelers fan that I am, you know, Chuck Knoll, right? We've talked on this show many times, Bob, with the Steeler legends, but Chuck Knoll always used to talk about, you know, after your playing career, getting on with your life's work, right? And to your point, it seems like Warren has gotten on with his life's work, and what his life's work is giving back to, you know, so many organizations and so many people around the world, and he's doing a heck of a fine job of that.
Amen.
All right, we're going to get to Robin Cole on the other side of this brief station identification.
Hello, everybody. Van Earl Wright here, reminding you that you're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with the dynamic duo of Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari, right here on the Armed Forces Radio Network.
I'm so excited to say that now joining us on the Kyven Foods guest line is former Steelers linebacker Robin Cole. Boy, I loved 56 when I was growing up. Let me remind you about Robin's career. He, first of all, he's out in L.A., born out in L.A., played his college ball at the University of New Mexico, where he was named an All-Western Athletic Conference player in 1975 and 76. He left New Mexico as their all-time leader in tackles, and he set the single-season high for sacks with 17 back in 1975. He was the only linebacker ever drafted in the first round by Chuck Knoll. He was a 21st selection overall in 1977. Played in the NFL from 77 to 1988. All but his last season was with the Steelers. He played that final season with the Jets. Selected to the Pro Bowl in 1984. He led the Steelers in tackles, plus had a sack in their Super Bowl 14 win over his hometown LA Rams. And like I say, we are so thrilled to have him as a part of Thursday Night Tailgate tonight. Good evening, Robin. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Is this Chris?
Yes.
Hey. How are you guys doing, man?
Good, Robin.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Fantastic. Bob, pleasure meeting both of you guys here over the telephone. And I just wanted to jump in there. It was a couple of things that we were you know, a lot of times when somebody's talking about a person and they're reading information, you kind of it kind of brings up things in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll jump right into this. And what I'm saying is that the sack number, it is, and we talk about this now because a guy by the name of Bruce Herron played for the Chicago Bears. He was also a football player at the University of Mexico when I was there. He was the other outside linebacker. And we talk about this. That number you said about sacks when I was my junior, it was my junior year at the University of New Mexico, the number 17. And I still say to Bruce, I said, I remember when we were in a meeting and we finished that year and we counted all the sacks, I had 19.
And, yeah, right.
And we started, it was funny. We started, I said, hey, you know, we got to get that number straight, coach. And the coach said, oh, don't worry about that. You're gonna get drafted. And every time I hear that number, I said, you know what, now the son of a gun's going someplace, we can't get it out. And everybody talks about numbers today. It's unbelievable, you know. It's like back then, nobody cared, but now everybody talks about numbers. They said, oh, man, I got cheated on a couple of numbers, right? But
yeah,
it's okay.
So have you ever gone back to the guys
good,
at the – Have you ever gone back to the guys at the University of New Mexico, a statistician, somebody in the office there, and go, you know, hey, look, I need you to change this number.
Oh,
yeah, that 17 needs to be a 19.
I did. Hey, you know, I did that. I went back to look at the film. Golly, they threw half the film away. I don't know how you did that. But evidently,
yeah.
Because we've changed hands so many times, you know, the head coach has changed.
Right.
The president of the university has changed a few times. So then you have new people coming in. So people start getting rid of things, and I don't know why they do that. A lot of places, they continue to keep that kind of information from the early years, but a lot of things have gotten misplaced for whatever reason. Because nobody can find it, right?
Yeah.
But it's okay. It's okay. I can share with you. It's all good stuff.
There you go.
I was just listening. You guys had Warren Moon on a minute ago. Warren Moon. Warren Moon is one of my heroes. I used to love the way Warren Moon prepared for a football game. I really enjoyed it. And he's just a great guy. And he was a great ball player, number one. A great, just a phenomenal quarterback.
Right.
Very smart on the football field. And as I finished hearing it, I knew this, that he was a man with the that matched the personality, his football personality. As a man off the football field, he's just a super guy.
Yeah, couldn't agree with that statement more.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Robin,
so what
let's
are we
talk
talking about guys. What are we doing? What are we doing here? You got me following Warren Moon. Golly, it would have been something if you had me following, you know, following somebody that I didn't know and didn't know nothing about, that didn't do anything. Golly, Warren Moon's done everything. He's made all kind of great things happen, and God bless him and continue to bless him in his charity and all the things that he's doing, the great
right.
work that he's doing. Like I said, a tremendous guy. And now you got me back. God, how can I top that? You guys want to talk to me
nope.
next week?
Come on, I mean, you got a couple of Super Bowl rings to your credit, right?
Hell yeah, we did that for sure. We did. But you know, blessings upon all of us and the Pittsburgh people, all the same. Yes, we did. We won a couple of Super Bowls. Just phenomenal. Opportunity to be able to say you won and played in a couple of Super Bowls. I used to think everybody was going to play on a team that would win a Super Bowl eventually, but in my time, it didn't happen for all the teams. So it is very, very special.
So, you know, we've had, you know, several former Steeler legends on the show, Robin. I'm a big Steeler fan. I'm from Pittsburgh. And, you know, one of the things, like, you know, we were talking to Andy Russell not all that long ago, and it's, you know, it continues to amaze Andy that, you know, here we are, you know, 40-plus years later, and people in Pittsburgh still revere you guys, fans like me, still revere you guys for the things that you achieved. You were there for the last two Super Bowls and that run in the decade of the 70s, and you played there for well over a decade. Does it amaze you how much, you know, we Steeler fans still hold you guys in reverence?
Well, see, I guess we were the test market for this type of media today. I mean, our generation. Never knowing, I mean, how the dance pool was going to be to where people would still be able to see on television and see you pick up the telephone and put in your name and you pop up on let it be whatever. I was going to say iTunes, but not iTunes, but what is the it pops up on your telephone. I mean, all this information that's out there, and it just
right.
keeps driving the key driving the fact that there was something special done, and it's, you know, and people are seeing it. Back in the old day, the only person that got any credibility or notoriety was the king. But it's changed now, okay? It's changed now, where more people get the opportunity to get get to know you, but they get to through television, they do get to know you some, okay? And because of that, then, you know, it draws everything and keeps people involved. And golly, I think about the Steelers fan club. It's just phenomenal how these people and what
Steeler Nation, right?
That they do. Oh man, Steeler Nation is phenomenal, and the people just love it. And I love it too. Okay, we all love it. We all enjoy it. And but I'm just fortunate that it's still happening. And like Andy said, Andy's a little older than I am, and it's still happening for him. So hopefully, it happens for me for another 20 years.
There you go.
Okay.
You're a kid from L.A., and you got the opportunity to actually, you know, play in a Super Bowl in your hometown. What was that like playing against the Rams in your hometown?
That was really awesome. It really was. Here I am. I get the opportunity. Now the first 2 years, my rookie year and my first 2 years, we played a game in San Diego. Then we played a game in San Francisco, but nothing in the Los Angeles area.
Mm-hmm.
We get the opportunity to go back home and play in the Super Bowl. I mean, I get the opportunity to go home and play in the Super Bowl. It was just a couple of us that were living in California at the time, in Pasadena. And I think about the ticket prices, but I ended up buying, I think I had to buy 30 tickets. No, they were expensive now then, but then again, still, my pay wasn't as good.
Okay. Right.
Okay, but you know, the family was there, and here I'm number 56. Now, you know, they ran out of numbers when they were making jerseys for the offense and defensive side of the football field, right? So you got all the Hall of Fame, the guys are preparing themselves to be Hall of Famers. So you don't get a jersey made with your number on it. Okay,
is that right?
So I had to go and buy 30 jerseys. So I had to buy my family's jersey so they would have 56. So I had to develop my own fan club, okay? You know, it's still today. You can't find a cold jersey any place unless I sold it back to the store, okay? But I mean, but what I'm saying is that we had such great players that even a guy that was a first-round draft pick, okay, and in fact, in 76 kind of, dominated the outside linebacker position. Okay, if I can say that, that's okay. I can say that. Okay, as leaving as a college player and to come to a team that was so loaded up that, shucks, man, I couldn't get any dibs.
Right.
Okay. I mean, that's how great it was.
Okay? Yeah.
And you had
kind of
players. We even had those kind of players that were sitting on the bench. So there it was. So now here we are going to the Super Bowl. And I get an opportunity to be home, and I mean, it just I mean, you know, everybody's shaking his side, and then to be playing the L.A. Rams on top of that, and the guy that played on the other side of the football field was a guy by the name of Wendell Tyler. Wendell Tyler was the running back for the L.A. Rams. Now, Wendell Tyler, my senior year in high school, they came to Compton High School and beat our butts, and I mean, he ran all over the football field.
Mm-hmm.
And here I get the opportunity to play him one more time.
Yeah.
And, man, I said, whoa, no way. This guy, not this time. It's time for me to win one, okay? And I said, I got the troops to win it with.
Yeah.
It was all those kind of little things that's going on, you know, outside of the game that people see that's going on in your head, you know, people that you've come across over the years, and you're running into them again, and you get the opportunity to play against them. And Wendell's just a great guy. I love him like a brother. And I told him, I said, no, we're going to take this one. And so we're fortunate enough to win the football game. It was just really great. It's really great.
No doubt. Bob, questions for Robin?
And Robin, yeah. I got to give a shout out to Compton High School, because I was looking at some of their stats this afternoon. I think there was close to 25 guys that made it to the NFL. And I'm talking guys like I think Marv Fleming. We're talking some
Roy
impressive
Jefferson.
Names. Aaron, there's another one, Roy Jefferson, Aaron Craver. I mean, that's some kind of group. So got to give a shout out to them guys. But
definitely shout out to Compton.
Oh yeah, and it's just very impressive, Robin. And you know, you must have been one hell of a player in college too, because a first round draft pick coming out of New Mexico. Now, nothing against the school, Robin, but it's not what we would call a quote unquote football factory. I'm sure you guys had a lot of pride and a good team, but man, to be noticed and to come out, that's impressive. And my question was, when you were drafted that day, here you're going to a storied franchise, your first reaction, Robin, I mean, do you go in saying, I have to prove myself to these guys, I have to kind of keep a low profile, or do you go in there ferociously and say, I'm going to take whatever I can get? And I'm just wondering what the mindset of a young kid going into a storied franchise is.
It was the latter. Coming in, the first thing you think about or thought about, say, well, these guys were world champions a year ago.
Right.
Okay. A couple of years ago, they were world champions, and they went back to back. And my first thought was, I have to go and prove to these guys that I can play with them.
Right.
Because that, you know, that's what I was being drafted for. I was being drafted. Andy Russell retired that year, and then when he drafted me with the idea of me filling his shoes. And then we also had Lauren Taves there, but I mean, that was the idea of drafting me. So when I came in, I realized as a player from the University of New Mexico, and then as a leader, the captain of the football team, blah, 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 I realized I understood leadership, and leadership starts with following. So, I wanted to prove to the team, the guys, that, hey, I can play with you guys. Whatever's lacking, give me some time. I can eventually make it happen. And, golly, I was blessed to be able to do that. Now, what happened to me when I first came in here, I broke my arm my rookie year. In fact, my first game was Monday Night Football against the San Francisco 49ers, and I broke my arm in half.
Wow.
Okay. And yeah. I didn't play the next 8 games, but I came back, and the arm was really not healed. But I came back with a broken arm and finished the season that year. Okay. But wanting to play with that was the draw of that, and wanting to play with these guys so bad, and wanting to be a part of what that we were trying to do again. Once I came here and realized that that's what we're going to try to do as a team, to go back to a Super Bowl, that I wanted to step up to my A game, and believe it or not, I had one.
Yeah.
So, well, some guys, you know, they'd be C's and B's all day long. I mean, some of us can step it up. We can step it up to the A game, and I just love being able to do that with those guys, because we really had a lot of fun together. We really did.
Robin, I read that LC Greenwood is the one who took you under his wing to help you on and off the field when you arrived in Pittsburgh. LC, you know, God rest his soul, is one of our favorite guests. You know, he joined us several times on the show. I can still hear his wonderful laugh in my mind.
Oh,
talk
yes.
about your relationship with LC.
Oh, yes. You know what, LC, in fact, LC was the only guy that did this with me, or even asked me, you know, what was it that I wanted to do as far as living here in the Pittsburgh area. And I began to talk to him about entrepreneurism and talk about some things that I wanted to do. LC just kind of, you know, he took me under his wing. He really did. He took me under his wing and began to teach me the businesses that he knew, things about business, what opportunities would be out there for us, how to really adjust and live in the Pittsburgh area. I mean, it's different in Los Angeles, even though business is being done, but sometimes business is being done a little differently, depends on where you are, where you live. And then we just became great friends. Man. I hung out with LC in the early years, he's a brother that I miss. He was a real brother for me. He was a big brother. I used to call him that, man. I used to call him Big Brother. So that's what he was to me, and just a phenomenal friend. guy I loved and a guy that's truly missed.
Agreed. Robin, I know you spent some time in Pittsburgh as a chairperson for the local March of Dimes, the Arthritis Foundation, as well as doing some work with Easter Seals and your own foundation as well. Talk about the charitable functions that you've been involved with, plus the fight against prostate cancer.
Yeah, well, my foundation is, I'm the president of the foundation, so I spend most of my time now with the Obadiah Cole Foundation.
Did we lose you? You still there, Robin? I think we may have lost him. You know, Bob, when I think back over Robin's, fantastic career, and you know what a stealing nut I am. You know, he came along at a time when, to his point, playing against the Rams and being a part of that Steelers championship team, that, it wasn't a transition from Andy Russell, who left after the first couple of Super Bowls, and he stepped right in and was a heck of a contributor. And then, through the lean years in the 80s, when the Steelers didn't do a heck of a lot, and got to a couple AFC championship games, but didn't do a lot, but he was a heck of a stellar performer.
I'm sorry. Yeah. You know what I did?
Oh, get back with it. There you go, Robin.
I'm back. Man, I got the phone. I'm sitting here talking to you. The phone's in my pocket. I got earphones on, and all of a sudden, I didn't hear anything.
So, complete your thought. Talk about what you're, the things you're doing now for all the different charities.
With prostate cancer. We're talking about prostate cancer. And I'm sorry, I don't know where I lost yet. But what we do at Obadiah Cole Foundation is we save lives. Our mission is early detection, education, and also awareness. You know, when we think about prostate cancer, there's 30,000 men still every year passing away, dying because of prostate cancer. That's 2,500 men a month. That's 83 men a day.
Wow.
We're fighting a war that would, if we were fighting a war that 100 troops were dying every month, or excuse me, every day, we run out of soldiers very quickly.
Right.
This is something that my brother was diagnosed in 99. My second brother was diagnosed in 2001. It runs prevalent in my family. My third brother was diagnosed in 2003. I was diagnosed in 2004. I had my last brother was diagnosed last year, November. So eight boys, all of us ended up with prostate cancer.
Wow.
It's not a family tree. So if you have somebody in your family with prostate cancer, whether your grandfather had it or not, if you're around, or if you have any information about your grandfather or even your great-grandfather, one way to do it is get checked. Get screened. So that's what we advocate of, is get screened, making sure men get screened, because this is a disease that if you catch it early enough, it can save your life.
Right.
Save your life.
Robin, tell our listeners how they can find out more about, you, your foundation, and all the things you're doing, now away from the game.
Okay. The Obadiah Cole Foundation, you can go to obcolefoundation.org. That's obcolefoundation.org. It was named after my father, Obadiah. And, if you even put in Obadiah, you'll probably find it for prostate cancer. And we're still in the Pittsburgh area. Telephone number is 412-572-6830. But if you go to the website, the information is there. You can read up on what we're trying to do, how we're trying to go about doing it. This is vital. It's just as many when we look at cancer, period, let it be breast cancer for women, prostate cancer for men, or any forms of cancer. We're trying to make sure that we understand that this is something that, if caught early enough, could really save your life. So go to the website, check it out, take a look at it, and if you want more information, it should be right there.
That's fantastic. Robin, thank you so much for joining us again on the show. I have so many questions. I'd love to have the opportunity to ask him, sure, Bob, the same. We hope you'll come back and do it again sometime.
Oh, for sure. Let's do that again.
All right. Take care, Robin. All the best to you and your family. We look forward to catching up.
Thank you. God bless you. All right.
All right. Take care, Robin. Great stuff from Rob and Cole. Again, OB Cole Foundation. So the letters OB Cole Foundation, C-O-L-E. Great stuff, Bob.
Yeah, Chris, he, like you said, we'll have to get him on and get into the meat and bones of some of those teams he played on because, as you said, it got a little leaner in the 80s. But any guy who played with Bradshaw, Franco Harris, and a ton of guys like he did, you know, he always took a back seat. But he was one of those players with the nonstop motor. You remember him well. And even ended up, well, he'll always be a Steeler, but played that last year, and I think I mentioned it on the last show, in New York for the Jets and played pretty well. And he enjoyed his experience there, but I hope we'll get him on soon and talk about that.
Absolutely right. All right, we've got our next guest hanging on the line. Now making his fifth appearance with us on the Kaivin Foods guest line is our friend Leon Searcy. Let me remind you about Leon's background. He's from Washington, D.C., played his college ball at the University of Miami, where he was a first-team All-American his senior season. He was a member of their 1987, 89, and 91 national championship team, so three national titles while he was there. He was elected to the University of Miami Sports Hall of Fame in 2003. He was a first-round draft pick, another first-round draft pick, the 11th overall selection by the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1992. Played in the NFL from 92 to 2002 with the Steelers, Jags, Ravens, and Dolphins, named to the Pro Bowl in 1999. He's also an ESPN 30 for 30 sensation. You've seen him on two of those episodes. He was there for The U and also the Broke episode. After his playing career, spent a few seasons as the offensive line coach at Florida International University, as well as coaching, you know, youth players and some players individually. And we are excited to have him back with us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Leon, how have you been?
How you guys doing? I'm glad to be on again.
Good,
yeah,
man,
we
thanks.
Missed you, my friend. So, Leon.
I missed y'all, too. Why did it take y'all so long to put me back on the show?
We'll make sure it's quicker next time, I promise.
Yeah, well, I'm trying not to take that personally, but I'm glad to be back on, guys.
Thank you, Leon. So, Leon, before we get any of your insights on what's going around college football and the NFL, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, you've got several projects that you're working on. You and I were talking a little bit about it before the show. Mm-hmm. You've got some apparel design for offensive linemen that you're doing. You've got some sports equipment you're working on. Plus, I know you're working on a new book as well. So update us on all your sort of outside projects that you've got going on.
Well, you know, my book is coming along. I've got Renee from Integrated Play. She's helping me decipher some of my auto notes into a paper form. And we're talking with a company that's going to help us with that area. I'm still coaching. I love coaching. I love mentoring young men. I love seeing them elevate their games, especially offensive linemen. So I do a lot of coaching down here in the South Florida area, you know, as far as going to camps, going to high schools, going to middle schools and stuff like that, because I love mentoring, molding young men. And, you know, I've gotten inspired to start my own company. The name of the company is called Real Man Block, and it's geared towards offensive linemen. It's T-shirts and apparel first, but I also have, like, five patent-pending handheld devices that offensive linemen can use on by themselves or with another offensive lineman that just help their game, you know, help with their punch, their feet, their balance, their footwork, and all that kind of stuff. And I still talk to kids on – I evaluate film. Kids send me film, whether it be via Facebook or Twitter, and I give them a fair analysis of what stuff they need to work on just from watching their game film. And I'm just trying to build a community where offensive linemen could interact with one another and talk to one another about how they can get better. And that's my passion. That's what I love doing. And I'm just thankful for it. But there's a lot going on, and I've been extremely blessed these last few months. I've been inspired to create these ideas, so I'm just moving forward with it.
That's great. How can, you know, for our listeners that want to check it out, how can they find out, you know, about the apparel and the things that you're doing? How can they find out more information about Real Men Block?
I'm sorry about that. Well, everything I'm doing is kind of in the infant stage. Right now I just got the website up. It's called realmenblock.biz. I end up having to purchase the domains, and right now I've just got just about the company, just talking about the company in general. I'm talking to people that were designers with the apparel, you know, T-shirts, dry fits, Scullies, I'm working with someone in designing gloves specific to offensive linemen needs to help them with their punch and all that kind of stuff. And then I've already got my attorney that got the devices patent pending. So we'll probably end up going to the University of Miami and see if I can get an engineer to kind of draw up the designs for me so I can get prototypes made and just try them out at some of the high schools. And probably end up seeing if I could get the University of Miami to use some of the equipment that I designed. So everything's on the up and up. But the website is called realmenblock.biz, and it's just in this infant stage. I just had it up maybe just 2 weeks ago. And I'm just taking this one day at a time, and I'm sure the company is going to have success. But it's all about – it's not about the income that I get. It's about the impact that I'm going to have on offensive linemen. Lives. I want to see them grow and mature and live out their dreams, and I just want to be a part of it.
Ah, that's great stuff. Good for you, Leon. So, Leon, I know you mentioned going back and doing some things at the University of Miami. I know nothing gets you more fired up than talking about, you know, Miami Hurricanes football. Things have sort of fallen off for the boys at the U over the last, you know, probably decade. They've averaged about 7 wins a year over the last 10. How do you feel about the job that Al Golden is doing, and what do you think they need to do in order to kind of get themselves back into a national championship race?
Well, I've never been one to tell someone that they need to lose their job, but I just think that University of Miami right now has – I think they've become a more of a country club environment over there. I think they there's too much job security over there at the University of Miami. I think that if Florida State can have the success that they've had, and Florida had all these teams, Florida State, Florida, they've all won in our 10 years of irrelevancy. You know, Florida State has played for a national title, won a national title. Florida has won two, and Miami has just been lingering about the last decade, and I'm just afraid that the school has become so comfortable in its legacy and its past that they're not doing anything to give the fans or inspire the old guys that they want to look like anything that resembles what we were in the past. I think that like any other company. You know, University of Miami is only relevant solely based upon the fact of the things that we did in the past. I mean, the U and being on TV and all that stuff has nothing to do with their success on the field now. It has everything to do with the documentary, the things that we did in the past. And I think that far too often the coaching staff and the people over there are living off of that. And now they'll tell you that you don't see how we grind, but something's wrong. If you're getting the top prospects year in and year out over the last 5 to 7 years, you're getting ESPN ranked top 10, but for some reason that's not translating on the field. And it comes a point in time where you can't keep blaming the kids, that these coaches have got to take accountability that they're just not getting it done. And the school's to blame as well, because they won't put up the money to bring in a coach that's going to win us the title. And I just think that to this point, I just think that the coaching staff with Al Golden is not the staff that's going to help us win a national title. And I've got guys on the staff who are friends of mine that probably won't be friends of mine after this interview, but it's just, I'm just stating the facts. And I really don't care, because I just hate to see the program that we built, that the powerhouse that we made while we was there. I hate now just to see them comfortable with 6 and 7 wins a season. And it's being tolerated. It's been tolerated over the decade. And I think it's the fans and the guys who paved the way deserve better.
And to that point, Leon, you know, it's been that 10 years since, you know, Miami's really been a relevant school fighting for a national championship. And we've seen other big schools like Texas and Nebraska, Michigan. You know, I'm from Pittsburgh, so Pitt, who was a powerhouse in the 70s and the early part of the 80s, you know, they fall down the list of desirable schools for, you know, top high school, you know, recruits after a while, because, you know, everyone wants to go play for a winner, right? So once that program starts to slip, it becomes hard to get back up the top of the list for, you know, where kids want to go play college football. Talk about that. I mean, how do you regain that image? You know, how would a Miami or a Texas or a Nebraska or a Michigan, now that Jim Harbaugh is there, how do you fix that?
I asked a million-dollar question. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I don't know the answer to that. I know that we have a boatload of talent right here in South Florida just leaving and going to other schools. We can't rely on tradition and what Miami used to be. We've got to build a new foundation at the school. They've got to – what we did in the past, I wish they would, but I know they won't, but they need to take all those – they need to scrap all that stuff about the U and what we did in the past. Those kids need to build their own foundation, start their own legacy. And that's my only take on it. I don't know what it is. We're getting the talent. We're getting the 4-5-star recruit kids. But something – about when I see them play, they play hard, they play with passion, but they don't know how to finish. And I don't know if that's coaching, I don't know if that's conditioning, I don't know if that's a game plan, I don't know if there are adjustments not being made, but I've gone to games and see these guys just come out with a lot of passion but just can't finish games. And we've been in a lot of games, the Florida State game in particular. I mean, we had Florida State. That is probably the best game I ever seen University of Miami play in a very long time. But for some reason, they tucked their tail in between their legs at the second half. They had to know that Florida State, being a coach by Jimbo Fisher, team that's going to come back to play harder in the second half. For some reason, we just laid an egg in the second half, and Florida State escaped with a win in that game. I don't know what it is, but you're dealing with a different type of kid, too. I mean, these kids now, and I've been around them, they have this sense of entitlement, and they want to play early, and they want to play early. They want the attention. They want the accolades so they can get on and go to the next level. If you got those kind of kids spotted around in your program, I don't know how much success you're going to have, but you know what? There's kids like that in every program. I mean, the Alabama's having the LSU, but they're having success. But I don't know what's wrong with the University of Miami. For some reason, we're just not getting it done. And what's more alarming about the fact that how mediocre we've become is that the backing of some of the prominent University of Miami players, the backing of the coaching staff and the coach after a 6 or 7 season is just it's very alarming to see some of the greats, whoever played at the university, y'all need to calm down, y'all need to give Al Golden another chance. I mean, he had the same record that Randy Shannon had at the end of his season. And there was a marching band to get Randy up out of Carl Gable. But for some reason, this guy's given another season after a 6 or 7 season. And with all the talent that I'm hearing about the University of Miami that's going into the NFL, how can you have all that NFL talent on your team and you come away with 6 wins? It doesn't make any sense to me.
I have questions for Leon.
And Leon, we've talked in the past of what a hotbed of football Florida is in general. Now, you played in Orlando right in the middle of it all, and I guarantee that you were so highly recruited from so many schools both in and out of state. What made you go south, Leon, and instead of perhaps up to Gainesville or Tallahassee?
On a recruiting visit, when your first recruiting visit is Miami, it's kind of hard for anybody. It's kind of hard for Tallahassee and Gainesville to be Miami, especially when you start off. So,
right.
I mean, I was going to stay in the state of Florida regardless. So it came down to Florida State, Florida and Miami. It's just Miami was just a different flavor when I went down there. The guys were so confident and passionate about winning. I mean, I'd never been around you could say a cocky, arrogant, or whatever it may be, but it was just something about being those guys that it felt like I felt like I was around a bunch of champions. And I wanted that feeling. I wanted to, whatever it took to feel like they felt, I didn't care how hard you worked me, you know, how hard you ran me. I just wanted that they had, that flair, that confidence, that swag that the University of Miami players had at that particular time. I wanted that. And when I left there, my second visit was at Florida State in Tallahassee. And it was a complete opposite when I went there. When I went to, they had a little dorm party on campus. And I went into that little dorm party. I remember seeing Sammy Smith and seeing Deion and all the guys like that. The whole time I was there, they talked about Miami, how they couldn't beat them, how Miami had this. And I was like, I said, now I could spend, here's going to be, I could spend 4 or 5 years with a champion and winning. Or I could spend 4 or 5 years here wondering how I'm going to beat Miami. And that pretty much sealed the deal for me, to be quite honest with you. I mean, Florida didn't give me a big visit, so I mean, I didn't care to go to Florida either way. But I mean, but I loved Miami. I loved what they were about. I loved that they wanted to be champions. They wanted to compete, and I wanted to be a part of that.
And obviously, it was the correct choice for you, Leon. And you end up in Pittsburgh due to your great college days. And you know, when you got to Pittsburgh, the 4 years you played there were under Cowher. Now Cowher's always been associated with defenses. You're on the other side of the ball, but what made him a great coach overall, Leon? When people ask you what made him such a good motivator?
Well, I mean, what made Cowher so great is, like, I mean, every day in practice you felt like he wanted to put on the pads and hit you. I mean, because he was passionate about, he loved the game of football. And he was a player's coach. He knew when to push us. He knew when to push the right buttons, but he also knew when to let up. I mean, and the thing about it is, if you think about those offenses, defenses at that particular time, I mean, we weren't going to spread you out. We weren't going to go empty. We weren't going to go 4-5 wide. We were going to play sound, aggressive defense, and we were going to run the ball and play action. That's the way it was. I mean, under Ron Earhart, it was that simple. We were going to pound the ball. We were going to run the ball. We're going to play action, take our shots down the field, and then we're going to play sound defense on our attack style defense. I mean, I just think about the guys that were on our defense at that particular time. I mean, you talk the Lloyds, the Kirklands, the Browns, the Gilders. I mean, Jason Gilder was coming off the bench. You had Woodson, Lake, Darren Perry, Kevin Green. I mean, sometimes I would be literally on the sideline watching that defense saying, I'm glad we don't have to play them. Because that whole Blitzburg package, and you just think about the defensive minds that were in that defense. You're talking about Dick LeBeau, you're talking about Marvin Lewis, and you're talking about who was the other one there? It was Dick LeBeau, Marvin Lewis, and Don Capers, all in the room at the same time, coordinating defenses. Come on now. I mean, that's why we had so much success when we was at Pittsburgh at that particular time. I mean, because we had rock solid coaches and coordinators, and they just got it done. And I absolutely love playing for the Steelers. I love playing for Bill Cowher. I mean, he was hard nosed, tough, and every day he just asked you to bring your lunch pail and your hog hat and go to work. And that's what we did. In the early '90s, we just went to work.
Leon, a couple more before we let you go. First, you know, I got, you know, being a Steeler nut, I got to know, and you mentioned, you know, a couple of the names there, a lot of names there a moment ago. What was it like for you going up in practice against, you know, at tackle, and you played some left and some right tackle? What was it like going against Kevin Green and Greg Lloyd?
Well, the funny thing about it, the first time I remember, it was my rookie year, you know, and the whole thing, I held out all the way until like the last couple of days in training camp. So I came in late, and, you know, I had this, you know, coming from the University of Miami, all this winning, all this swag, and, you know, but when I came in, I was late. You know, I was basically on the scout team, and I had to go up against our defense. I'm a first-round draft pick on the scout team, giving our defense a look. And I remember I was playing right tackle, and I had to run the counter tray, you know, with the guard pulls and kick out the end, and I pull up on the linebacker. And I remember coming up in the hole and having to hit Greg Lloyd. And Greg Lloyd was, you know, 6'2", maybe 225 pounds. And I gave him my best stuff, and he didn't move. And that was kind of my welcome to the NFL, because what I thought I could get away with in college, it was not going to be suitable in the NFL. I knew that the game was going to be faster, and I had to be tougher, and I had to be sound technique-wise. So when I hit Greg Lloyd with my best and he didn't move, I was like, okay, I'm in the NFL. I said, this is a grown-ass man. I just hit, and he ain't moved. So I said, okay. I said, all right. I said, I need some growing to do. Me and Kevin Green made me better, because we fought almost every day in practice, because he beat me a lot. I ain't going to lie. First couple of times he came to practice, he just beat me. He beat me soundly. And, you know, me being the competitor that I was, I didn't like it. So we were getting the fist fights. But I said to myself, I'm not going to get any better fighting this man every day. I said, I got to elevate my game so I can block this man. And that's what I did. I took it as a personal challenge going up against Kevin every day in practice, because as far as I'm concerned, the guy was a legend coming when he left the Rams to come to Pittsburgh. He was a legend at getting after the quarterback. So I knew if I could block this man every day in practice, that whoever I went up against on Sundays, they won't have a hard time getting around me. So he made me better as a player, because I had to be fundamentally sound and my kicks, my slides, my punches. And Kevin was deceptively very, very strong. I mean, you wouldn't, you know, I mean, he looks like a rock band member, but when he came at you with that thump, if you didn't sit down on it, he was going to run you over. So he made me a better player having to go up against those kind of guys every day. And then, you know, just going up against that defense every day, you didn't have any choice but get better. I mean, you got Kirkland in the middle, and you got Lloyd and Green on the outside bringing it in. And then you had Joel Steed in the middle at nose, and you had Buck there, and you had Ray Seal. So that defense was rock solid. So our offensive line, having to go up against that defense every day, and we can only get better, because if you could block those guys, you could block anybody on Sunday.
There you go.
True.
Leon, we've got our next guest, Jason Grohman, hanging on the line. We need to get to Jason, but before we let you go, remind everybody again, realmenblock.biz, but where else can our listeners, you know, follow you over social media?
Well, it's realmenblock.biz, just follow me on Facebook or follow me on Twitter, and I'm going to see this company grow, and I'm going to help a lot of linemen on the way.
There you go. Leon, we look forward to it. We'll have you back real soon. Let's get you back on here in the not-too-distant future. You can update us on how all those projects are going. Plus, you know I could sit here and talk Steelers football with you all day.
Okay, all right. I appreciate it, guys. I have a wonderful evening.
Thank you, Leon. We'll catch up soon. Take care.
You got it.
Great stuff from Leon. Seriously, again, realmenblock.biz. And, Bob, we've got our next guest, Jason Grohman, hanging on the line. I got to get to Jason right away. But before we do, I want to give a quick shout-out. You heard Leon say it, Renee Schell. Well, you know how much of a fan of Renee Schell that we are, right? She's doing such great things at Integrated Play. So if you're either already in job transition or you want to be in job transition or about to be in job transition, go to integratedplay.org online and see what Renee Schell can do to help you. We all like to do business with people that, you know, that we trust and who have actually our best interests at heart, and that's hard to find. Well, you're going to find it with Renee Schell. She is just absolutely fantastic. There isn't another way to describe Renee, or a better way to describe Renee. She's doing such great things, above and beyond things, for some of our guests who have either been in job transition from being pro athletes and are now getting in the job market, or just everyday people, you know, that are in job transition. She's absolutely the best. There isn't another way to describe Renee. If you work with her for 2 minutes, you're going to understand why we say that every single week on this show. So do yourself a favor. Check her out online. You can find more information at integratedplay.org, plus also give her a follow on Twitter at integratedplay. All right, now joining us, making his first appearance with us on the Kyven Foods guest line, is Jason Grohman. Jason is an executive producer for NBC Sports Radio out in L.A., as well as a producer, a show host, a sports reporter, and a board operator at station KCRW out there as well. Jason has become a wonderful friend of the show, and we are very honored that he has taken some time out of his night to join us on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Jason, Chris, and Bob, thanks for being here.
Hey, Chris and Bob. Greetings from overlooking Chavez Ravine as the Dodgers get ready for their big opening day on Monday. It's going to be hectic in my neighborhood.
Good for you.
Nice
to meet you. I live right across the street, so they're getting they're putting up the banners. They're ready to go out here in Los Angeles.
Jason, you are a member of a very exclusive club. In fact, you and my co-host Bob here are the only two members in that club, I think. You both talked to two different Chris Mascaros, which is a very rare feat. Talk about my much younger and more successful Chris Mascaro friend.
Oh, high energy. This guy knows his stuff. Chris was always, he'd always come on anytime we needed him, and I can't say enough about him, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And you as well, Chris, man. You came in for us a couple times during the playoffs with some sound analysis, and we always appreciate you joining us on the NBC Sports Radio Network.
It's always my pleasure to join you guys out there. And Chris has been on our show as well. So, yeah, great guy. We've enjoyed having him.
How confusing does that get?
Yeah. I mean, how often can you say this is Chris Mascaro interviewing Chris Mascaro? What are the chances that that ever happens? So yeah, it was great stuff. Jason, to your point, being out there in L.A., with all the rumors flying around now about a potential joint stadium effort with the Chargers and the Raiders, plus, you know, fans, you know, some fans hoping that, you know, the Rams are actually going to make a return to L.A. What are you guys hearing out there about, you know, the future of NFL football in L.A.?
Probably the most realistic view we got here is Stan Kroenke bringing the Rams back to Los Angeles for their 50th year in Los Angeles. All the pieces are in place. The mayor, James Butts, he is really spearheading this effort, going through all the legalese. I don't know if you saw some of the blueprints with this new stadium that Mr. Kroenke has put together. I mean, it's all the way down to sewer lines.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it is. It's underway, and with his silence, they call him Silent Stan in St. Louis. You're probably going to see the Los Angeles Rams return to the LA area, and I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, no, that
as a child going with my father to the Coliseum and seeing the Rams play, it would be a good thing for the city.
So, you know, I'm just, you know, if you look over the history of, you know, of football in L.A., Jason, you know, it was unsuccessful. The Rams ended up having to move. The Raiders were there. Then they were gone, you know, about 12 years later. Why would it work now when it didn't work then?
Why would it work now? There's a groundswell. We in Los Angeles here, we are entertainment capital. There's a lot of backing with Hollywood wanting wanting the NFL product back in Los Angeles. Well, the problem was for the Rams in the 90s, they moved to Orange County, and Georgia Frontieri did not spend money on the team. She didn't want to pay the great Eric Dickerson, our colleague over at NBC Sports. So there's a lot of issues of not spending money and looking to return and to her hometown with an NFL franchise after the Cardinals left.
Mm-hmm. Bob, questions for Jason?
Yeah, Jason, when I think of football in L.A., right away the name Al Davis comes to mind. And I just wanted to get your opinion as far as the legacy he has and the opinion of people out there in L.A. right now about one Al Davis.
Al Davis is a respected member of the community. Even when the Raiders went back to Oakland, he lived out here. Mm-hmm. He was good. He's good friends with the former Clipper owner, Donald Sterling. You'd always see them palling around out here at the Clipper games. Al is an interesting fellow. Folks in the nearby community, Irwindale, aren't that happy about it with their plans of moving the Raiders to Irwindale. And they gave him a great sum of money, and he seemed to take off with it. So that way. So there's a love-hate with Al. I've always respected Al Davis. I think he was an innovator in terms of the NFL. He brought a lot of new ideas to the NFL. So on my side over here and a lot of my colleagues and friends, we love Al Davis.
Mm-hmm. And as far as L.A. radio out that way, Jason, here in New York, obviously it's cutthroat, it's competitive, it's there's a lot of in-your-face stuff out there. Is it as tough out there? I mean, what is like the topic on a daily basis there, or does it change seasonally like it does here?
Topic du jour is you got your Dodgers coming up, starting their season and with expectations. A lot of talk has been on the football returning to Los Angeles with the Carson Project and the Inglewood Project. So those are the hot button topics, and you got your, you know, as we approach the playoffs, the NBA basketball, and how horrible the Lakers are And what are they going to do?
Sounds crazy, but.
Yeah.
So, Jason, I'm curious. We've got the draft. We're about a month or so away from the draft. Leonard Williams, a 6'4", 302-pound defensive end out of USC. Mel Kiper has him going number two overall to Tennessee. Jason, I'm a big Steelers fan. That would give my former guy Dick LeBeau a nice defensive end to add to that defense. Talk about your perspective on Leonard Williams.
Leonard Williams, he brought a lot of energy to the to the SC. He's got a great personality. I know you see some of the comments that he makes in regards to, I need to be number one, and if a quarterback goes for number one, I'm going to sack him. So that's Leonard. Leonard in a nutshell. But he's dedicated, and to any team that picks him up, or maybe your Steelers could trade up for him.
I'd love to hear that.
The curtain.
No doubt. I'd love to have a guy with that kind of talent. I don't, the Steelers don't do that sort of thing. You look at that organization. We don't make trades and we don't sign free agents, really. I mean, every once in a while we got Jerome Bettis from the Rams once upon a time, but it doesn't happen very often. So as much as I'd like to have visions of that happening in my head, I know it won't.
Yeah, I'm still a little upset with your Pittsburgh Steelers beating my Rams out here in the Super Bowl at the Rose Bowl.
we had Robin Cole on earlier. It was an L.A. guy who got to play for the Steelers in that Super Bowl. So, a lot of ties.
That's right. And with Warren Moon as well, he went to my high school. I went to the same high school as him. We were both Hamilton Yankees out here in Los Angeles.
Oh, there you go. So Jason, your
Warren's
local
a great guy.
Yeah, he is. There's no question about that now. Jason, your Pac-12 college teams, USC, UCLA, 9-4 and 10-3 respectively last season. What's the forecast looking at the 2015 college season, and can either one of them challenge Oregon for the Pac-12 title?
USC has got some more players coming in after the sanctions. They had their spring practice, a little spring ball, both UCLA and USC. And SC performed pretty well, from what I heard. Coach Sark doesn't like a lot of people at his practices.
Is that right?
Yeah. He's not quite as bad as Kippen, but Sark is making some changes there, and expect some good things from USC. And UCLA, in general, they seem very loose in spring practice. So there's some confident clubs out here in Los Angeles.
Bob, one more for Jason?
Sure, Jason. Hearing anything to do with L.A. and the Yankees in the same sentence is pretty wild to me. That's a whole other thing, but here in the East Coast here. But as far as when you growing up out there, Jason, just you personally, who were some of your early sports heroes and guys that you really liked to watch play?
Oh, I loved Pat Hayden, the Young Bloods. Of course, Steve Garvey in that infield with Ron Say, Bill Russell, and Davey Lopes. Those were my two primary teams that I followed, the Rams and the Dodgers.
Those are great memories. Great.
And how about you? How about your team as a kid?
My team as a kid? Wow. Man, I grew up cutting my teeth on, as far as football, it was pretty much New York Giants, Pittsburgh Steelers. But my favorite athlete, Joe Namath was huge out here, Jason, huge and on and off the field. And, but all time I was probably fascinated most by Pistol Pete Maravich. I don't think there'll ever be an athlete like him.
No. And they're trying to compare Steph Curry to him.
No, not yet.
He's got a ways to go.
Right.
Nobody can run that ball. And, even Magic out here in L.A. can keep up with that.
No, I remember Magic, before they did the All-Star game, they had a tribute to Maravich one day, and they just asked Magic, and he just smiled, and he said, just be one pistol, you know, it was just... We'll talk about that some other time. He was a freak.
I think, on the subject, I think the New Orleans should have their Jazz name back. I'm going to leave it there.
Great.
Before we let you go, mentioned the Dodgers a couple of different times. What's your forecast? Yeah. Are they going to win the West?
It's going to be tight, but San Diego looks really good this year. They got the pitching.
Right.
Yeah, I'd see a wild card berth. I don't think they're taking it out here.
All right.
Too many changes. I'm being a fair observer. I think San Diego should take the National League West.
All right.
And your Yanks?
Bob?
Yanks? Well, I'm not looking good. It's probably third, fourth place, Jason. They're too much age, too much injuries, and I think most people out here have that feeling that it's just it's going to implode. Probably the over-under dates for guys getting hurt around June 15th, so it's not good yet.
Yeah, and I think their record's going to be even much better than the Mets, as always.
Yeah, there you go.
Jason, how can our listeners follow you both online and over social media?
You can follow me at The Real Grohman on Twitter, and you can check out our shows on the weekends on NBCSportsRadio.com. I work with Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated, NBA senior writer, great guy, Jason Page, and Ross. So you get a chance on the weekends, and after you're done podcasting, Thursday night tailgate.
There you go. All right. Thank you, Jason. Great having you as part of the show. We look forward to hopefully we get to catch up with you again soon sometime.
I would like that. That'd be great. I'll give you a better college update as things get closer to the summer.
Yeah.
Hey, we'll get a report on the Dodgers during the baseball season. We'd love to have it.
Oh, fantastic. You got it. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care, Jason. Thanks again
for
being a part of the show. All right. Good night.
Thank you.
Jason Grohman, and Grohman is Groman. So if you're looking for him on Twitter, at The Real Jason Grohman. So great stuff from Jason, Bob, and, to his point, when you look at what's going on in the LA scene, I'm sure right now everyone is looking the other way from traditionally this time of year. They're all focused on the Lakers. Not so much right now.
Isn't it strange, Chris? And it's great getting his take on all of that. But it's a wild time in LA. You know, the Dodgers almost getting to the top, and the Lakers falling to the bottom. And football, is it going to come back or not? So.
Right.
It's great getting it from the horse's mouth as far as what's going on in L.A. It was a little bit of an L.A. theme tonight. It was great.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Bob. It's time for us to put a bow on another episode of Thursday Night Tailgate. Great job out of you. Always, always the biggest privilege of the night is sharing the airwaves with you, my friend.
Same here, Chris. I appreciate that.
All right, next week, who are we going to have with us? Well, it's going to be a night filled with great friends. Some of our favorite guests, are going to be back with us on the show next week. So former Jaguars kicker Mike Hollis is going to be back. It's been a while since Mike's been on the show, so we look forward to having him back with us. We'll be celebrating the start of the baseball season, so it's going to be a great time to have our friend, former Rangers and Yankees outfielder, with a theme going here at the end of the show, Billy Sample, whose birthday it is today, by the way. So, Billy, if you're listening, happy birthday, my friend. Billy's
awesome.
Going to be back on the show with us, so we look forward to that. His movie, Reunion 108, is out on DVD, so we're going to talk about that next week when he's on the show. Our good friend Mike Golic Jr. is going to be back with us to share his experiences from the Veterans Combine that was a couple of weeks ago. Former Dolphins and 49ers running back Delvin Williams is going to be making his TNT debut. Look forward to talking with Delvin. And former Jaguars quarterback and Florida A&M offensive coordinator Quinn Gray will be back with us. And as well, as you know, every week we have our regular weekly 12th man segment with David Meltzer. So all of that going on next week. So it's going to be a fabulous show. We hope you'll come back and join us and be a part of it with us as well. Want to remind everyone how you can follow us on Twitter. I am at CT Mascaro. Bob is at Bob_Lazzeri, and the show is at TNT Podcast. Please also check out our page on Facebook. Give us a like. That's important to us, too. And if you got a question you want us to ask one of our future guests, please let us know. We'll be glad to get that on the air for you as well. Plus, you can stay up to date with who our future guests are going to be. You can stream or download any of our archive episodes for free by going to our site, ThursdayNightTailgate.com. Bob, take us home, my friend.
That sounds like a lot of fun next week, and Chris, and happy Easter to you and yours, my friend. And thanks to our announcer, Joe Lajanusa, for the great job he does with our weekly intro and ads, and to Kyle Turley, Tim Pickett, and all our friends over at Gridiron Records for their partnership and our upcoming outro music. On behalf of myself and Chris, we thank everyone out there for listening. An early happy Easter to everyone who celebrates. We appreciate all of you the most. Until next week, good night, Kevin. Keep fighting.